Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet,
sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Today I have Carrie Vinson. She's going to come back and talk about wedding cakes and talk about also her book and a couple other projects she has working on. If you have a question, please call at 347-324-3460, or you can post your question in the chat room. Well, Carrie, thanks for coming back on the program.
You must love me.
Absolutely.
So soon, but so much fun. I really enjoy this sort of thing.
Great. I guess let's talk about cakes real quick. You know, this is the season. Everyone, kind of ironically, in church yesterday, we've been having the went to a celebration of a couple who's celebrating a 50th anniversary, and then I'm seeing a whole bunch of couples. And you know, this time of the year, from May to really the end of summer, you're getting all these couples coming up with. It's nice to see when you see someone get a lot of couples over 50 years. That's a long time.
It is.
A lot. I mean, probably I've seen
half a century.
This weekend. Probably I ran into about 60, 62 couples over the course of the weekend who was over 50 plus, which is awesome achievement. I guess today's topic, we're going to talk about wedding cakes. And, you know, couples who's at the beginning stages of, you know, engage and plan a wedding, what advice do you really give them as they plan, prepare for a wedding cake?
Well, the first thing that they need to do is the minute that they decide they're going to get married is they need to make a booking for the cake. I read so much rubbish on the internet and editorial advice in magazines and elsewhere that says, oh, you only need to get your cake designer a month before. It is absolutely the worst possible thing that they can do. First of all, if they want a cake that's unique, they need to give the designer time. And if that designer is bombarded by lots of people wanting huge tiered cakes just a month out, what's going to reflect is a lack of really good design work, because it's going to get to be, you know, shunted in the line with all the rest of them. If you have a designer in mind and you want to make a deal with them, you get engaged a year out, and 11 months you decide, okay, you've already booked the church, because that's a fight to get the date you want. It's also the thing with the cake designer. It's easier actually to get the dress, because the dress, there's just so many options out there, and obviously retail outlets where they can go shopping and looking at all sorts of different designs. But when you get down to that, you're looking at hundreds of designers who are providing wedding dresses. And so, you know, the sky is the limit when you get down to your town, if you are living in a small town or even, you know, a reasonably sized one. You have formula cakes, which are really quick and dirty, and it's nothing against what they do. It's they churn them out really fast in the department stores, grocery stores and so forth. And they are not known for really refined design. And yes, if you want one of those cakes, it can be a month, because they are prepared for that and they have a lot of people working on the production line to make sure that happens. But if you're wanting something a little bit more convoluted and a little bit more complex, then you need to give the designer time. So do not listen to any advice other than this one, which says the moment you know you're getting married, book your cake, go looking for your dress, book your church, not necessarily all of those things in that order, but those should be on your to-do list immediately.
Wow. You know, I think that, you know, probably wedding cakes were probably towards the end of people thinking about this whole process. But you mentioned, several other people mentioned, said your wedding cake and your dress is what people remember.
It's one of the most important considerations. If you think, and if everybody listening reflects, you will see that I am right. Usually the discussion about, post-discussion about what happened at the wedding or while the wedding is going on and subsequently the reception, the bride is the queen of the day. And sad to have to say, but our poor old grooms are probably like an afterthought in one sense because they're left completely out of the argument. And if they're smart, they should run like heck because getting embroiled in cake business and all that sort of stuff is women's work, really, although some men are finding their way into it, but actually they're a little out of their depth, and so it's fine for them to have the superficial conversation, but I think it's better if they just leave it to their women folk to get the story evolving. But it's the next conversation after the bride's dress is discussed and her appearance and how fabulous they look. Nobody really goes into waxical philosophical discussion about how fabulous the tux is unless the guy has gone out and bought something really unique and off the wall, because a tux is a tux is a tux. And yes, they'll look smart and yes, they'll look good looking on the day, but nobody really sits down and goes stitch by stitch about how fabulous his boutonniere was or what his suit looked like. I mean, it sounds awful, but it's really true. I do not remember in my entire life that discussion. However, once the dress has been given the once-over, then we move to, okay, what's next in line? The bride goes off for a few photographs immediately after the wedding, and then the guests are left to their own devices to make their way to the reception. And where do they go first? To look at the cake. So I really believe that the two most important elements in a wedding setup for the final production, I'm not talking about all the little parties and the family relationships and all of that sort of stuff that lead up to it, is about the cake and the bride. And first of all, of course, it's the bride. And second on the list is the cake. Nobody really talks that much about, I've never heard anybody really have a conversation or start a conversation with me about, oh, the flowers were fabulous that were decorating the tables. They might say the bouquets were lovely, but usually they take it as a whole panorama and not particularly picking the eyes out of what everybody's doing. But that cake stands alone, just like the bride does. And so it is fair, I think, given that consideration, that people give their baker and cake designer, sugar artist, whoever you're dealing with, a chance to execute something worth looking at.
Wow. You know, you have the... So that whole scenario, the cake and the dress, have you seen people with the cake and the dress that they get something close to their dress and design or the same style, if that's making sense, if it's a modern or if it's a classic tradition, or they usually just allow the cake designer to make a piece of art and they go from there?
You have been doing your homework, haven't you? the main thing is really that people do tie their gown and their bridesmaids' outfits to have some connection with the cake. It is awful if you have a bride that's totally set on something pop and then find out that when you get there to deliver the cake that they're wearing something entirely different, and so it looks like nothing works together. And I think the entire bridal party, the flowers from the florist and the cake designer ought to look like the whole thing has a meshing effect so that they do belong together. There's nothing worse than having somebody contemporary in contemporary dress and looking at a traditional wedding cake that doesn't even go. It's also a good thing to think about the colors so that the colors actually mesh. I'm in the middle of a cake right now for an individual, and, you know, I'm taking great pains to have the details reflect her color swatches and exactly what she's going to have on and what her bridesmaids are going to wear so that the whole thing ties in. Now, that said, you have to also remember it doesn't matter what I, the designer, think if the designer is put in a position to have to produce a cake that the bride has her heart set on and doesn't care whether it matches what she wears or anybody else in the party wears at all. And so as the customer and clientele, probably into the future, it is very sure that you must do what she wants you to do, because after all, the bottom line does stop with her because she is paying the bill. And so there can be a little bit of a conflict of opinion, shall we say, in whether or not you do what's best for her and what she's wearing. And that's your salesmanship, I think, which is the most important thing. If I see that a bride is really going off the track and is not connecting the dots together, then I try to sell the story that I believe will make it work and that will make it cohesive. Because right now, when you're young and getting married, you have all of these ideas that are hitting you right between the eyeballs from the internet, from the bridal magazines, from all of the applications of media and social networks that we have out there. They get, I think, beyond the point where they can even start to think rationally. They start getting confused with the big picture. So I feel it's up to me to try to help them as the designer to work their way to a picture that will look good in 40 years from now. You talk about those 50-year-old weddings that are going on that you just saw at church. All of them made it because they talked. And if they look back on their photographs, I think those days everything was more traditional. They will probably not be that unhappy with what they saw in with themselves cutting the cake or having their moments with their bridal pictures. Now, there is such a driven designer ethic out there where every 4 seconds there seems to be a new collection. There's another red carpet where so-and-so is wearing thus and so, and everybody is distracted in this direction, that direction. It's like you can't keep your eyes going fast enough to keep up with what's going on. And not only are you distracted by what's going on in the United States, but because of the internet, you can be anywhere in the world you want to be to see what they're wearing, what they're eating, what their cakes look like, what the bouquets look like, anywhere in the world. And so sometimes I think too much information is worse than not having enough.
Well, taking that into the world itself, I know you travel abroad all over the world. What do you normally see with wedding cakes throughout the world in different countries, all over the, you know, pretty much all over the world? Do they vary, or are they pretty much the same focus, usually the same styles, or it follows a certain flow?
Internationally, it's quite interesting to watch how things are changing. And because this world is getting smaller because of that internet connection, you don't even have to leave your armchair to know what's going on abroad. Now, for me, when I go abroad, the first thing on my list is the grocery store. I like to go into a grocery store of a new country that I've never been to before, or even the ones that I have been to. I always like to pop in and see what's going on. You can tell what people are doing, not only by how they dress, because it's a given that most people pop into a shop and maybe buy some clothes or whatever when they're away, but not many people think about going to the grocery store. And from there, not everybody goes to do this. I go to see what wedding designers are doing, because photographs are not always as fabulous as what seeing the real thing is all about. So those are my two things. Unfortunately for my husband, who thinks I'm insane because I decide I need to go to grocery stores and look at a wedding shop here and there and see what's going on, he more or less understands the latter thing better than the former thing. But it really is the nuts and bolts of what makes people tick in each different country. You know what they eat, you know what they buy, and what their pattern of buying fresh food and groceries is, and that gives you an instant understanding into the psyche of the nationals that you are going to be mixing with. Because when you go on holidays, unfortunately, unless you're very lucky, you don't really get invited into somebody's home. You see them from a hotel lobby or on the street. But it's rare, unless you're in a very hospitable country, and actually mine is one of them. Australia's big on grabbing people off the street and taking them home and introducing them to the family and giving them a barbecue and that sort of thing. And I grew up with that. But now with security the way it is and people not always being quite who you think they might be, people have a tendency these days to lock their doors, where when I grew up, you didn't lock a door at all. Now things happen as they do in other countries, in my own country, and so some of those things are not as spontaneous as they used to. So The only way to get an intimate feel for what they are is to go to those outlets, and it does give you a bit of a bird's eye view into their lives. As far as cake design is, we are as connected as anybody else in any given field. Somebody makes a fabulous cake in London and they post it on the internet. We are going to know about it. It will go virally, just like the same as anything else of interest. So immediately, we are looking at images. Now, in the last decade, things have changed tremendously. In the United States, which was traditionally buttercream and still is, but they have now learned to love roll fondant and gum paste, which they did not want to love. And so that has changed the picture of decorating in the United States. And that actually emanated in Australia, South Africa and New Zealand, was a Southern Hemisphere decorative style. And all of a sudden,
what is that for the people who don't know?
Roll fondant, I call it big girl's Play-Doh. It's like a sugar paste that you can roll into a ball and use it just like you would use Play-Doh. You can mold things out of it. You can model with your fingers so that you can create little things freehand, or you can roll it out or model it out and use cutters to create flowers and leaves and figurines, just like any other artsy, craftsy medium, such as Fimo, Play-Doh, ceramic work. All of it has a hand-in-glove sense. And so I can make anything out of sugar to replicate botanically correctly anything in the garden. Right now I'm into hydrangeas that I'm making for this wedding cake, and I don't just pretend to send a hydrangea to this cake. I have hydrangeas growing in my garden, and I whip out there and grab a couple of blossoms until they wilt, which doesn't take long with them because they deteriorate pretty quickly. And I will create the first, and if I don't like the way they look, they will be remade and remade until I get it exactly where I can put them alongside each other and nobody can tell the difference. And that is my goal as an artist. Now, there are others out there that don't have lofty goals like that. All they want to do is make a pretty good facsimile, and they can whack a rose together and say, 15, 20 minutes without much effort. I might even take as much as 3 or 4 hours to refine a single rose, because I particularly want to do it that way because it's what I've grown up with. And so the mediums change. In France, you won't have gum paste or roll fondant or buttercream for a wedding cake. You more typically would end up with a croquembouche, which is little Crook and Bush, which is a pate. Oh, I can't even think of the name of it. What is it? They're like chocolate eclairs, but they're little round balls. I'll think of it in a second. But anyway, they're all these little balls of pastry that are stacked one on top of each other, and they make a pyramid. Mm-hmm. And then you actually spin cooked sugar over it, and the little balls are filled with custard. And then you spin sugar over the top of it, and you might put some live flowers that have been dipped in egg white and sugar and pop those on, but they won't do anything that looks like anything that you would recognize here. Although that said, the trend is it's called pate au choux. I'm really sorry, I forgot to the
no,
name
that's
of
all right.
The balls, but it's pate au choux. And we are now seeing the French starting to be mildly interested in what's happening with roll fondant and gum paste, and we are receiving information from other folks that live there who are saying that there is interest and they want to know more about it. So we get a sense of what's going on because they're reaching out, asking for technique and so forth. So that means that brides have been watching what's going on the internet, and even if the artists don't want to do it, the bridal group will exercise power there, because they say, well, I don't want a Crook and Bush anymore. I want what American women are having, or I want what Australian women are having, or what British people are having. And so, therefore, you better learn it, or I'll go somewhere else. And so that is exerting power on the decorative market. Now, when you go to Holland, they don't care much about roll fondant and gum paste, although it's in a huge growth mode there at the moment. But traditionally, they have always been about marzipan. And in America, mm-hmm. where you have vanilla or flavored cakes, light pound cakes and so forth for your wedding cakes, in England, Australia and elsewhere, in Europe, it's always about fruitcake. And here, it's like pouring snail poison on a snail if you mention that somebody would be having a fruitcake for their wedding cake, because they think, my God. And all I ever hear about is really bad stories about wedding cakes or Christmas cakes that have been made for the season, and they're dry, and everybody hates them, and they pass it on to grandma. Poor grandma. I don't know why she keeps getting all these cakes, but it seems like these are the little anecdotes that are part and parcel of the American traditional storytelling. Nobody loves fruitcake.
No, so what you think, because it's just like bad experience, because people are not cooking them correctly, or it's just, I like them. I only get it once a year, but you always get different varieties of it. Sometimes it's too dry, it's rare that you can get one that's moist. What is a good recipe you recommend, tips you can tell a person, this is really how you make a good fruitcake?
Well, I think the key is that everybody's in such a hurry to get everything done in such a hurry that the cake recipe sometimes goes by the board. A lot of decorators, myself included, I have to put the brakes on myself, because there's no more fun about baking a cake. It's like, okay, out comes the mixer, and oh yes, in goes the ingredients and into the oven and out of the oven. All I want to do is hurry up and get to the decorating moment, because that's the fun part where you can really, the sky is the limit when it comes to design. So I think a lot of times that is why the bakers, and America's been brought up with it, where they have fast cakes, which is not necessarily that they're coming out of the oven too soon. It's just that it doesn't take as long to bake a regular cake as it does a fruitcake. A fruitcake can spend as long as 3 hours in the oven before it's ready to be taken out. But it's how you take care of the fruitcake. You can't let it dry out in the oven process. We do all sorts of weird and wonderful things. We put pans of water in there that simmer so that the cake doesn't dry out, so that there's steam in there. We add wrappings around the outside and what we call collars, and that protects the edge of the cake so it doesn't burn.
Mm-hmm.
We also feed the cake after it comes out of the oven and cools off. We mix simple syrup, which is a combination 50-50 of water and sugar, and then we
mm-hmm.
add a little bit of alcohol. And in case anybody listening is getting beside themselves about the alcohol for religious reasons, it's nothing to do with religious reasons. It's to do with preserving the cake. And this hot syrup is actually poured over the cake while it's still warm. And you wrap it up in cheesecloth and put it in a cake tin, which is really well sealed. And once a week, you feed a bit more of this syrup to the cake. And you just paint it on and leave
wow.
it. So that, and for 6 weeks you do this. And then finally you decorate it. Well, most people over here don't have that kind of patience. And
patience.
people are short on patience here. People in my country have been used to that. So they don't see it as so labor intensive that you shouldn't be doing it. So, but I will say, for those that might get worried, religious consideration needs to be taken in hand, because people do not want to have alcohol if they're not supposed to be having it. But the big deal is that when you cook the sugar, the alcohol cooks off and you are just left with the flavor. So alcohol actually burns off really quickly. And once you have prepared your syrup with the alcohol in it and it's brought to a boil, bang goes the alcohol, and all you're left with is the flavor. It's like if you're cooking a piece of meat and you flambé the pan and it's on fire, that's the alcohol burning off. And once that fire goes out, which only takes seconds, there's nothing left. So all you're ending up with is the flavor. So for those
okay.
that might have worries, please rest assured it is not a problem. You're not going to be getting into a ground where you shouldn't be. The only thing that I worry about with cake is peanuts and nuts. Peanuts, there are a lot of people allergic to them out there, and so you have to be very careful. And I have chosen over the years not to cook with nuts, although I love to for myself. And for, you know, normal celebrations that we'll have, but I couldn't bear the thought of a bride breaking out in something or a family member at the wedding or the reception because they ate nuts that came out of the wedding cake. So it's a pretty good thing to steer clear from them.
No, go ahead. Go ahead and finish.
I was just going to say, with the fruit cake, there are usually nuts in it, but those that are made for wedding cakes, it's usually removed and replaced by stone fruit of some kind. So it could be plums, dried plums, or dried apricots. And I think the thing is, too, when I look at the recipes here, they seem to be really absent when it comes to a nice mixture of really excellent fruit. We use not just dried fruit, but glacé fruit, which is not a currant that's almost unrecognizable. Its poor little shrunken self. It bears no resemblance to the thing that it came off the vine with, the grape that it used to be. If unless you're told, you wouldn't have a clue what it was. So with us, we like to put chunks of glacé, not dried, and not candied. There are two completely different animals. There's not so much sugar mm-hmm. in glacé fruit. And we cut those up in small pieces, but recognizable pieces. So in actual fact, it's more like a fruit roll than this really dark concoction that is seen here, where it's all the dark fruits, which is raisins and dates and currants, and that's about pretty much what's in it. Sometimes they use glacé fruit, the red and green cherries at Christmas time, but they're pretty mm-hmm. tasteless. They don't have much flavor. So it's better to go with things, and you can get more of the glacé type of fruit from the organic stores and from the health food stores as opposed to just the general supermarket. although I'm pleased to say lately, in the last 4 or 5 years, they've been getting cranberries and things in that we can bring into the fruit mixture, which makes it more interesting. And it's colourful. Glacé pineapple, glacé apricots, the same with apples, with peaches. It's a pretty mix of colours. And so when it's baked and you cut it, you're getting this kind of a rainbow, autumn rainbow, I should call it, because it's all sort of tawny looking, but it's not black. And it's far more appealing, I think, to the palate and certainly the taste buds when you eat that versus just a bunch of dried fruit chucked into the mix.
Wow. Let's back up for a second when you talked about flowers. This old adage that if you put anything on the wedding cake, it needs to be edible. What some horror stories have you seen that it should not be on the cake?
Well, the first thing that I think is an important story to tell is the fact that my colleague who lived in Oklahoma City, Maxine, who is sadly deceased, invited me to come visiting with her while she delivered a cake in Oklahoma City. And mm-hmm. I was, as she was, absolutely horrified because the cake had been requested to be simple and with no decoration except for borders on it, that the florist was going to actually bring the flowers and put them on the cake. So Maxine had zero control over what was going to have to happen to that cake as far as the flowers, the fresh flowers, were concerned. And we don't have a problem with fresh flowers going on a cake as long as it's handled properly. When the florist
And regarding the handling, I don't mean to interrupt you, how should they be handled properly in order to be put on the cake?
Okay, so that's where I was going.
Okay.
The florist wandered in with the flowers, and she put the flowers on the table, and then she just got around to coming to the cake. She had a kind of a carpenter's belt on with all of her tools. Now, Maxine had baked the cake in her bakery in pristine circumstances that had been overseen by the health department and with regular visits. So she was up to snuff when it came to how the cake needed to be baked and in what kind of circumstances, but she was in no control of what the florist did. The florist pulled a pair of scissors out of her bag that she had been cutting up all of these flowers and trimming with, cut off the bottoms of the flowers, did not put any kind of floral pick in there in order to keep the sap from the flowers going into the cake, and dug her scissors into the cake and pushed the flowers into the cake. And we could not do anything except sit and watch because she had been given instructions by the bride and it was beyond our control to do anything. So when I saw that, I went on a mission, and I have been talking profusely to everybody who does or does not want to listen to tell them to be, first of all, responsible. If you are asking for florists to put flowers on your cake, you have to make sure that the flowers have not been sitting in with the rest of the flowers growing all sorts of organic bacteria. I can't tell you what a horrible Molotov cocktail of dirty water that these flowers are sitting in. And then you just cut them off and you think, oh, well, it was above the water level. Excuse me. Those flowers have been thirsty, and they are drinking that water the whole time. When you cut off the bottom of the stem and still have the part that wasn't exposed to the water, so said, because you can't see it, and you shove it into the cake, what happens when there's a cut stem? It's amending the wound process of any plant. It will send sap to that point to stop all of the water coming out of there. But before that happens, it's like when we bleed, it takes a little bit. So every single mm-hmm. flower in there is bleeding into the cake, but you can't see it because it's not red-blooded like we are. It's just white. It's like water. It's dripping back into the cake. I actually sat some flowers to make my point for an international exhibition, demonstration, and presentation that I was making. I put the flowers into red-colored water. I cut them off. I stuck them into a cake, and then in front of all of the people, I cut the cake open. I did this in about the same time frame that the flowers and the normal wedding would be, about 6 hours before the people came and actually got to the cake. And when I cut the cake open, there were all of these little red bubbles of red water because it had seeped back into the cake. And people were stunned because they did not believe that that could happen. But I proved my point. There is also danger when it comes to using roll fondant and gum paste flowers. Gum paste flowers, because they are sugar, are used and attached to wire. And wire should never be inserted into a cake. All people who order gum paste flowers that go on a cake should be little corsages that are laid on the cake that can be removed when the caterers serve it. The caterers are not responsible for worrying about whether or not there's a lost wire in the cake, because if the head of the flower comes away from the wire, which ideally should not happen, but we cannot say it won't happen, then the caterers are busy and they're hurrying to plate the cake. They're pulling things out right, left and center. They're not checking to see if I've got 6 flower heads and only 5 wires. And if somebody by accident gets to chew on one of those things, it could go to a place that could do a lot of damage. Stomach,
wow.
Could be lungs, could be anything. So we need to educate the public to understand that these things need to be thought about. And unfortunately, nothing has happened in the United States so far to cause a hue and cry. But I keep warning, because I know one of these light years, it will happen. And whether they like it or not, whoever gets sued is going to say, oh, why me? Why me? Because everybody else was doing it. Well, I'm a leader in my group, and so I know that they know that I hate that. And there is another thing at the moment that's become fashionable that's driven by the fact that it's a design idea from the designers, but it's also from the public who are in love with feathers. And people in our business can make sugar feathers, and sometimes they're just lazy and they don't want to, and it could be because they don't get paid enough to make them. So they are putting feathers from the craft stores on their cakes. Please be reminded that most of these feathers are coming from China. They are not being made or prepared or colored in places where they are food approved. So these feathers are full of all sorts of bacteria and so forth, plus the fact that bird flu is alive and well out there. And the last time I was informed of the last epidemic, a lot of people died. So I believe that people need to be responsible and not put feathers anywhere near a cake, because it's just like animal fur, the dander from your dog or your Kit Kat or the bird. All of them have these little things that fly into the air, and we don't need to be eating them. There's enough stuff flying in the air now that we can't control. At least we can be responsible and control these things. And I think it's most important, and I'm really glad that you brought it up, because it's probably boring for a listener who thinks, oh, God, what's this woman going on and on about? But if it happens to be your family, it won't be so funny if something awful happens. So I am in the business of being the cake policewoman, letting people know by word of mouth, please, everybody out there, tell all your friends when you order a cake to make sure that you are responsible, because what you don't see doesn't hurt you and you don't grieve about, but it can get back to hurt you in a roundabout way. And I would hate to see anybody getting bird flu. I would also hate to see somebody at a wedding end up choking on a piece of wire that they shouldn't be having. And I would hate to get somebody get a disease by water that's dripping out of fresh flowers. And there are little picks. You know the little flower boutonnieres that they wear for the males when they're getting married? They have a little water source in there. Well, there's little tiny plastic equivalents of that thing that have a really sharp point that have been specially developed to push into cakes so you can have the fresh flowers. It costs a few dollars more to have those things. But wouldn't it be better to pay that extra little expense and everybody goes home happy?
Wow. So with the cake itself, as a bride is kind of budgeting how much you're going to spend on the cake, what is an average cost that they need to really expect in paying for a cake? Is it paying per slice, or you just pay for just one whole cake and call it there and say, well, I have an option to make it this size or this size? And not talking about the cake, but the cake serving sizes, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. The United States has a it has a history of only by serve. So whatever the cake baker and the client come up with, the budget versus what it costs and time invested, it's all down to ingredients, and then it's the time is more the important thing. And so if somebody wants something really complicated, then they're going to have to pay. And I have had people who say to me, well, I'm going to have my wedding at the Blah Club, and I know they're paying tons of money to go there. And most of the time, some of the Blah Clubs I actually belong to myself, so I know in a very detailed way how much it costs. So they will say, I've only got 50 people coming, but the lobby at the Blah Club is like as big as a cathedral, and my cake has to look big in there. And so that when people walk in, you know, it's making a statement. Well, I can't be responsible if you are going by serves and say, okay, for 50 people, the cake should be a 10-inch, 12-inch round cake, and that's about it, with a 6-inch on top, which is like a pimple on a pumpkin. It's not going to be useful at all as far as a centerpiece that's shouting that I'm filling the lobby. So I say to them, you know, it's up to you what you want to choose. I never, ever, ever would do by serve, because I think it's outrageous. It's a stupid system, and you can wash my mouth out with soap and hit me over the head because I'm not being very, very nice about the system here. But honestly, it ties people up in knots, because I do a cake commission. What do you want? If it's about small numbers of people and not a huge event, then we talk a smaller price. But if I am a person who, you know, they say they're a social bunch and they want a huge cake and they really don't care because they've only got 150 people coming, then I'm just going to tell them that this is going to be an expensive production because they want this thing to impress the world, and that's not my problem. They have to pay for that experience. If it's by the serve and you have 50 people, so what do? Give them 3/4 of a 16-inch cake with a chunk taken out of it because they don't need any more of it because they're going to pin you down to those 50 serves. And that's why I call the serve thing outrageous, because people are busy calculating, oh, well, I've got 50 people and it's only going to cost me $4.50 a serve, so this is how much it's going to cost, and so I can get a cake for like $200. You can get a cake for $200. You can get a cake from 99 cents a serve to probably $15 a serve, depending on who the artist is, how visible they are, how booked out they are, and what their artistic work is like. If they have something unique, like Ron Ben Israel in New York, you are going to pay the privilege and the piper for what kind of cake you get from him. You go to Sylvia Weinstock, another one in New York, very well-known people with high-dollar cakes. You can also find people that can do cakes as well as they can do, but just don't have the visibility. But that's where you have to be the super sleuth and go looking, up and coming, people that really want to stretch their wings, and you might find that you'll get a cake from them for $7.50 a serve, which is probably half of what Ron or Sylvia might charge. Me, I'm in the $15 to $20 bracket a serve myself, so I understand, you know, but I spend weeks on the artwork. So if everybody wants this really amazing cake with artwork to take home and keep forever, you are going to pay. If you are just creating a cake that everybody's going to scoff down and eat and say, that was fabulous, and keep the little top tier for next year for your first anniversary, which I don't know why people do that, because after a year in the freezer, nothing tastes any good to me. So I don't know why they do it. It's just tradition. But it, to me, I think that's really where they have to determine how much and what the experience is all about. It's if you eat and get, then it's going to be cheaper. If you want a middle-of-the-road custom, you're going to be paying anywhere between $6.50, $7.50 a serve. That would be a cake that you would have copied from Martha Stewart magazines or somebody's book or whatever, where there's a lot of artwork involved and can take the person a long time to make and color custom it to whatever your colors are. And then you have a person like me, which is the Rons of this world, the Sylvias of this world. There's Colette Peters, another one out there that does amazing cakes and spends forever on getting the detail done. Then you're going to pay anywhere between $12.50 and $20 a serve. But, okay, as I said, I don't do serves. So it's like, okay, you want blah cake. It's going to have three tiers or four tiers. It's got to be fitting a vision. This person has a vision, and so I will price it according, like any other art piece. If you decide you want a painting to hang on the wall, or you want a piece of bronze made, all of the work that goes into this takes as much time as any pottery or any other more permanent type of artwork. Our only problem is our work is disposable. And because it's edible, it vanishes. But there are things that still survive. Say, for example, Queen Victoria's wedding cake. A piece of it went to auction just a while ago, and it was many thousands of dollars because the flowers and an actual piece of the cake had survived until now. And that says a lot for fruit cake, doesn't it? Because it will live forever.
Another fruit cake,
you know, so probably like concrete, but it's more to do with the history. And
people
don't realize, I mean, their cakes are being shown on stamps now. People are really recognizing the sugar artist as an artist alongside all of the other artists that have been traditionally respected, because we can do anything in sugar that they can do. I can paint with it, I can model with it, I can mold with it, I can make lace out of it, just like you said about a wedding dress. I can match somebody's wedding lace to the cake identically, not just a maybe facsimile. If I can get a swatch of the material, I can create that. All of those things come into play when you're taking time out. You know, you may have to make a custom mold in order to make an impression of the fabric. Then once you've done that, you know, all of this takes up time. And it's all hidden time that anybody who just sees the finished cakes, oh, it's fabulous, I love it, I love it, I love it. They don't really sit down. When did you sit down last and think, well, I wonder how many hours went into that cake? it's
wow,
not something
that,
on your mind.
Don't
you're
think
just,
about that.
No, you're just waiting. I mean, mine, I started this one last Monday, and it will not be finished until May 19th. It will be delivered to the reception area. And so I'm making sugar flowers, and I'm happy to have a time out with you because it gives my hand a bit of a rest, and I'm standing, so it gives me an opportunity to sit down. And I probably should sit down when I'm doing this stuff, but it's just a habit the way I've always done it. And I'm creating lace, and I'm creating hydrangeas and roses and all sorts of different effects. And this is going to be all finally, once the cake is baked, it will all be added to that cake. But we make all the design work first, and we dry it. And then the final thing is to make the cake and start putting all of this artwork on. So people who, you know, there's women out there, I don't do these particularly, but there are very many Hispanic women out there that come up from South America who love making figurines that are so good that you would think that they were from Yadro. They really can do amazing work. And those things don't happen in 4 minutes. It's really complex.
Wow.
And I find with my work, for example, I make flowers and usually try to figure a way to get three centerpieces for the cake in some kind of design configuration on it, because with buttercream, you can't take that souvenir home with you. But for example, if I have a centerpiece on the top and maybe two others that are spread across the tiers heading down the cake, then the bride can keep one permanently under glass for the rest of her life because it doesn't mm-hmm. deteriorate. The only thing that can ruin is if they get wet or dusty, in which case, you know, pitch them, because the water, they'll just dissolve, and the dust, you can't wash them to get it off. So it's better to keep it under sealed glass. And then it's a nice gift to give one to the mother of the bride and one to the mother of the groom. And they also go under glass, and it's kind of a permanent little thing that I think ties the mums together, that I think is really nice, because weddings are really more about the bride's mother than the groom's mother, because she is sort of, even though at the wedding itself she's a major role, but in the planning and coming up to it, my sister-in-law has four boys. And she said, well, she got out of it cheap, because the poor old bride's mothers, they were the ones that were paying all of the costs of the wedding. So she really had the minor role with the rehearsal dinner, although they have equal role at the wedding itself. But, you know, it's nice to sort of have that little gift. And I always suggest to them, you know, pack them up when it's over and put them into a little box, and then later on when you've got time, when the dust has settled, you can get a little glass box or a glass dome and put them under the dome and then give them to your mother and to your mother-in-law. And, you know, I think it's sort of a nice gesture that she's included as along with the bride's mother, and maybe beat off the horrible stories of the mother-in-law stories, which poor old mother-in-law,
wow.
I think she gets a beating and probably undeservedly a lot of the times, because it's just becomes almost like an urban legend that you're supposed not to love your mother-in-law, you know.
Wow. So four things real quick. The adage of people freezing cake, I mean, it is no way within the year, anything, even if you suck all the air out of it, there's no way you can preserve that piece of cake that
mm-hmm.
is going to be good for a year.
Mm-mm. You can't suck anything out of a cake box, because a cake that's going to be put in the freezer does have to go into a cake box if the design work that's on there, the piping, is going to survive. You
okay.
can't wrap it in saran wrap, and unless you don't care what it looks like when it comes out. I just
mm-hmm.
think, eat the darn cake while it's happening and forget about a year from now.
Thanks.
I mean, what's all that about anyway? Go out and have a nice dinner with fresh food. I think our big problem is a lot of this lack of taking care of food. People are eating rubbish out of the freezers because they're not dating their food properly, and anything that's in there that longer than 3 months needs to go. And I don't care what they say, it's dead. And once it's dead, it spends its time deteriorating. It can be held frozen in time for a certain period of time, but not forever. And every day
Absolutely.
It's in there, it loses just a little bit of something. And
okay.
I just believe that you need to go and buy everything you eat as freshly as possible immediately. Yeah.
Okay. And the other thing is, for three tips that you have for brides and their mothers who's looking for a cake designer, what three things that you advise them to look for in a cake designer?
Nine times out of ten, the bridesmaids find their cake designer from a wedding that they have already been officiating in. So, for example, when I first started, I never realized how much business was generated from the bridesmaids at the wedding. I thought it was mm-hmm. all about the bride. I think it's most important that they check out their own town. Usually word of mouth, everybody pretty much knows who the movers and shakers of cake design in their own town, especially if it's a smaller town. When it's a mid-sized town, they will also know because those people will pop up every once in a while, and you start asking around, you will find the horror stories. The other thing is that I'm finding on the internet too, the brides are not holding back when somebody did a bad job. They are very clear on there. If you can actually research the baker, and I have been quite shocked at some of the cake comments that I have seen about bakers. One of them that I thought had a sterling reputation and I had sent people to because the work I had seen decoratively looked good. And come to find out, there was a consistent commentary that was going on ranging from 2003 all the way through to the current, I only discovered it at the end of last year, it was like 2011. So those 8 years, burnt cakes were being found underneath the icing. So this person was not baking and paying attention to the oven. They were actually just burning the cakes and not even bothering to trim the burn. They were just shoving the icing on top of it. That is a no-no. And I learned, luckily I'd only sent a couple of people over there because it was a completely different city to the one and because I had heard from people that this person was good, I had never actually had their cake and I clearly said so, but I had heard that the reputation was good. Now, whether or not these people actually went there or not, I do not know, because I also made the caveat, you have to do your own research. And research now is so simple because you can find the ones who have been given, you know, the red housekeeping seal of approval, like go, 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 and then the ones that are churning out not so great. Those chat rooms and those commentary boards where you can find out exactly what's going on. And even the Better Business Bureau is showing stuff, you know, that you get an F rating or an A rating. Okay. If your bakery is not up there, that means that they've had more complaints than they should have. So, therefore, you need to keep looking. Your vendors work hand in glove. If they have a good working relationship with your, like the dress designer that you might choose or the department store or the small specialist store, they all know who the good people in town are. So when you're choosing your dress, say, hey, I need a cake. Who do you recommend? And normally they will give a good response because they don't want to be associated with people who don't have what it takes, and they also don't want their name said in the
Absolutely.
Same sentence as the person who's not doing a good job.
Okay. Last couple of things regarding your book that you wrote. You mentioned it's in its fourth edition?
Yes,
fourth
it's in its fourth reprint, which is really amazing to me. I am doing if anybody is listening from the Tulsa area, on Friday I will be at Miss Jackson's in Utica Square because they are having a little anniversary for me because it's actually 11 years since the book was published, and it's in its fourth reprint, and it just looks like it was. When it first came out, I'm really surprised because usually a book won't last so long. You know, usually out of print, way out of print by now, but it's still selling just like it sold the first year I published it. So I guess the publishers are pleased. So we're having a little light refreshments and a morning meet and greet and a Mother's Day moment because Mother's Day will be on Sunday. So I will be on hand to have conversation and, you know, questions, any questions over and above what I've already discussed today, I'm there to talk about, and also sign books. So it should be a lot of fun.
Okay.
I don't do it very often.
And the name of the book is
Romantic
Wedding
Cake. Yeah. If anybody looks for it on the internet, some idiot somewhere way back on Amazon put "and celebration cakes" on it, but it's not. It's Romantic Wedding Cakes Straight by Kerry Vincent.
Okay. And also, lastly, regarding the Tulsa, the Sugar, Oklahoma Sugar Art Show.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that real quick?
The Oklahoma State Sugar Art Show I founded in 1992 with my friend Maxine Boynton from Oklahoma City. And in 1996, I decided that we would have a grand national wedding competition, which Maxine wasn't that gung-ho to do because I wanted people who were baking to not only have a competitive wedding cake in a wedding cake division, but I wanted them, because of some awful tablecloths that I had seen under wedding cakes when I was making cakes for people, that didn't match, that had no connection, no design connection whatsoever. And I thought, I can't be the only one that's cranky, because I put a pretty, shall we say, dogwood traditional cake on a purple, green, and yellow Mardi Gras cloth from New Orleans that had nothing to do with either part. You know, it just didn't work. And it was really the catalyst that drove me to want to do this. And now it's become the largest judged sugar art show in the United States and the second largest in the world. It's really quite amazing. And it's here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And this year it'll be September 29 and 30. And anybody passing through should mark their calendars and drop by the Tulsa State Fair. We have 82,000 people who come through. And no, it's not a bottleneck. Everybody goes through and has an amazingly good time. I've never had anybody complain that they had to wait. It's all very orderly and there's no, just simply no roadblocks. It just works out really well. And these artists come in from all across the country and bring the most magnificent works. And anybody that wants to have a look at last year and previous year's winners, they can go to www.oklahomasugarartists, that's with an S on the end, the artists.com.
Mm-hmm.
So oklahomasugarartists.com. And I think we've got up there like the last 6 or 7 years worth of first, second, third, fourth, fifth, and honorable mentions and so forth, so that people get an idea of what the competition's all about. And it's a wonderful place to come spend time. The kids come and families, and especially after church on Sunday, we get a huge crowd. As soon as they've finished church, they go and eat something and then come out and have a look. But it's on for 2 full days, and it's the best of the best go head to head in Tulsa, Oklahoma every fall. And what happens in cake in the United States as far as competition and design for the future happens here. Yeah.
Wow.
So,
lastly, you have a couple other adventures that's happening this summer. If you can talk about those, I think you mentioned the White Room and some others.
Mm. I'm looking forward to doing White Room because I never really pictured myself moving beyond Food Network, especially, although I did go with Best Thing I Ever Ate, but that was also destined for Food Network, so it was about food essentially. So without giving the game away, because they've got me tied up knots with my contract and so forth, but I will be going to do an episode at the end of May for White Room, which is basically, and it just premiered, so it's basically an empty room where all the furnishings are just dead white with nothing there, and 4 competitors will be given a theme for each particular episode, and they will have to create some kind of fill for that room artistically, creatively, and something that's way out there. It can't be predictable. It can't be average. And the winners of the each of the episodes will get $10,000. So it's kind of fun, and they have trips where they get whatever equipment or necessary ingredients or whatever that they might need to do this show. So the first one that I watched on HG, just to give an example, was flowers. And so they went to the florists and they got 4 florists, and then they had to create a floral room. And so they went out to get the flowers and did all sorts of amazing, technically amazing things with these flowers. And then ultimately, three judges choose what they thought was the most captivating, the most innovative, and the most charming, and, you know, just something that really stood out different to its neighbors. And somebody waffled off with $10,000. And it's a way of getting your name out there, because the other thing is, what people don't understand about appearances on television, it's one thing to be the winner, and so many people get themselves all bent out of shape because, oh, I didn't win, so the whole thing's a total fiasco and it didn't mean anything. The $10,000 is peanuts, really, in the big picture, because if you are a designer that wants to get started in business and you have that opportunity to have a whole hour where probably 10 minutes of that hour is focused on you and everything that comes out of your mouth, this is your moment. Now, people have no idea or live in la-la land when it comes to understanding the costs of advertising. You are basically getting a free advert for yourself to promote yourself to death over that period of time. So if you wanted to go to Food Network and say, okay, I need 5 minutes of advertising airtime, can you imagine how much that is? It's millions. So these people need to maximize their opportunities, because I see what happens when they leave is they don't really go home and promote the gravy train. So you get this opportunity to be on national television where millions of people are watching you. You just don't go home and sit down. You go home and figure out how you consolidate that opportunity into something more. You connect with your local media. You collect with all of the outlets that you think might be interested in, A, watching it when it finally goes to air, and B, make sure that it's something that's going to help promote your business at home. And you, in the main, a small business person cannot afford, can never afford those kind of advertising budgets. You know that. It's massive. And so I've seen many of them, though. One of them actually did a show, and when the show aired, the local media called me to find out if I knew where these people were. And when I tried to help to get them connected, I could never get a cell phone, but I found a business number. They actually took off on a drive across the country to go and eat at Paula Deen's, when in fact their restaurant was the one in focus that night on air. I never will understand that, because they should have stayed home and worked their local media. And okay, here we are. We're on national television and we're the big story for our region, you know. But people, it's like my husband said, some people just simply don't understand how it all works. And I wish sometimes, in a way, that there was a paper that was produced to give to each of these competitors before they participate in something like this, because they are a bit novice and they don't really have a handle on what they ought to be doing. And so, you know, maybe a bit of education would be good, but I know that if I even brought that up, the production companies would say, listen, we're not their babysitters, you know, they've got to figure it out. And so it's a lost cause. But I do say it out loud when I can, because I think maybe once I let the seed germinate in their minds, then they'll start to think a little. I mean, some people are really savvy and get it right away, but there are some that I have seen who've lost some amazingly, oh, God, just nobody could be more lucky than they to get the opportunity. They just murdered it because they didn't lift a finger to support what happened when it finally went to air. So it was just a waste of time.
Wow. Well, I guess to leave us with today, and any advice that you would give a bride again who's looking at the wedding cake? I mean, you gave us some great tips, but anything else you would like to leave with the program?
I think the bride needs to just enjoy her day. I do get to see a lot of brides and mothers get themselves so caught up in the grand production that they forget it's a wedding. It's about family. It's not about showing how much money you've got. Who cares? At the end of the day, it should be a close thing. You don't have to have 300 people that you never saw for 25 years just because you want to show them how fabulously wealthy you got or how well you're doing. I find that sometimes I see tempers starting to, you know, you can see the tension and they're getting angry with each other. And by the time they get to the cake baker, sometimes there's been so much under the bridge that they can't separate, you know, the personal from just getting the job done. So I just think it needs to be about the bride. It doesn't need to be about the parents showing their friends and family how well they're doing. I think sometimes the mother of the bride can be guilty of not letting her daughter have what she wants. It's more to do with, you know, I remember one particularly who sat with me for a consultation, and the bride barely opened her mouth. And after 2 hours conversation about what was happening and what wasn't going to happen, I finally said to her, I said, is there anything that you would like to say? Because I seem to be having an entire conversation with your mother. And her mother leapt in and said, well, she said, I got the dress and the hair, and she got the shoes. And I'm like, what the heck is she talking about? So the girl said, oh, well, I wanted to wear, there was a new fashion. After you'd done all the bridal stuff in the high heels, then you put these sneakers on that are all decorated with glitzy stuff. And then they have fun and games with their dancing, and they're not staggering around on hugely tall heels that they can hardly walk on. And but they get down the aisle on that stuff. But I think by the time they get down their aisle, their feet want to be unscrewed from the ankles, because I think it's almost painful watching them. And so I said, well, you know, this is your cake. You know, aren't you going to say anything? And the mother said, no, the cake is mine. And I said, actually, no, it's not. And so the girl and she had a bit of a blitz at my table, and she said, well, her mother wanted her hair up and the girl wanted her hair down. And actually, I did see the girl at the wedding, and I saw that she did win out with the hair. She had her hair down, and I said, oh, well, good for you. Because that was not about mother of the bride and the bride. It was about pretension. And I think that it's not about, you know, if I want to go to a play, I'll go to the West End in London or go to New York or go to the local theatre. It's a wedding. It's about feelings. It's about launching two people into life, hopefully one marriage, no divorce. You know, you said about the people that have 50 years. I have 38 years up, and my husband and I have not been married to anybody else, just ourselves. So therefore, you know, but there are so many people who are divorcing. And Oklahoma, for example, has one of the highest divorce rates in the country. And I could tell you, before I finished designing the cake and having the cake consultation, who's going to make it and who's not, because already the chemistry is wrong. They're not getting married for really, I mean, the husband-to-be is cute. I could care less about cute. It's about gut. It's about heart. It's about love. It's about all of those things, discussing how you're going to live as a couple for the rest of your life, not this airy-fairy story of, you know, everything's like all about the wedding and it's not much about feelings. I really believe before people take that walk down the aisle, they need to decide, yes, I love this person, but this person is also going to be my friend. And if you have both of those things, then you will have a good marriage. If you don't only have one of those things, 4 or 5 years from now, that cute, oh, love is grand, airy-fairy feeling of what love is all about, will be gone as fast as quicksand. And they'll be looking for another husband or another wife and having a divorce. I mean, I have friends surround me at my age, and my husband and I are in our 60s, who have worked their way through their third and fourth marriage. Frankly, I don't even know why they bother, because it's off with the old and on with the new. It's a matter of making a commitment that is in-depth and heartfelt and thought out. It's not a game. It's a marriage, you know. And I want mine to last forever. And people need to go out and experience different relationships with different people before they make a decision. Then they can get married. And they don't need to be getting married when they're 17 or 20 or 21, because I have decided a long time ago people need to have the freedom to live their lives. And then they make a commitment to join another person within their lives. So if you've had no experience of the world, I mean, I was 30-something before I got married. There was no way I was going to get married as a baby. Now, you're immature. You don't have what it takes to stand up to all of the things that the onslaught of married life. It's not easy. You have to work at it. You can't just, this is not working for me, and I think I'm just going to get out. That's not how it works. You have to commit to this person. And I think that's what's really so missing with a lot of relationships. I'm not saying all, if people look into themselves and into their lives and decide, what is it that I want out of this thing? And yes, she's cute, but will I love her when she's got wrinkles down to her knees 50 years from now? And that's, I think, that's the question that has to be asked, because cute does not last. And if there are mannerisms and things that bother you, you know, they're not going to get any better. They're not going to go away as time goes on. In fact, those will probably be the things that will annoy you more. And so don't do it until you're really sure. And no matter what you do, and how long you try to work on whether or not it's the right or the wrong thing to do, when the final analysis, when you put your little finger on the pen to sign your life away in the registry office, when it's all boiled down, it's still going to be something different. So if you don't have a sound platform to launch from, you know, you're just going to be one of those statistics. So I say to everybody, think twice. And, you know, love is grand. Yes, we know that. But love and the passion, the first love that you have when you're all running around having fun dancing and stuff, it changes. And you have to be ready. It has more depth, and it means a heck of a lot more. So that's the one thing that I would think. Sometimes I have been really accurate. I think half of my brides ended up divorced, and some of them I made their second cakes. I can't admit to ever making a third cake for somebody. But I'm sure other people have. But in fact, I'm very sure they have. And I also think too, you know, divorce is a really ugly thing to have to go through. And if you can avoid it by being really responsible in the beginning, by not, you know, bouncing off and thinking, oh, yes, this is just fabulous, and don't think beyond this year. You have to think, you know, what's this picture going to look like in 10 years? What's it going to look like 20 years from now? Can I wake up alongside this person 30 years from now, and 40 years and 50 years, like the ones that you have just seen? And yes, if you can say yes, and all the warts, because life is not fabulous. Life has its ups and downs. And in the end, we hope that more is fabulous than is not so great. And my marriage is that way. It's has its little ups and downs. Every day has its ups and downs. It's not necessarily between the people. Sometimes it's a third thing that brings pressure that will affect two people when it's only really about one person. But because you're a couple now, it's a trouble shared as well as the joy shared. So I think that's probably my most poignant collection of little thoughts that I can give you that make it work for me, because it's all about respect in the end.
Wow. Well, we're going to leave it as that. I really appreciate it, Carrie, coming on to the show again and kind of give us a lot of information on dealing with wedding cakes. It's been a pleasure.
We got a bit far from wedding cakes, didn't we?
Well, we got the whole story, you know.
We did.
We began with
wedding cakes,
and then we went through a few shows, and then we end up with life lessons, which is really appropriate.
Well,
so,
yeah.
Get on the full cake.
Yeah, we did. We did. We iced the cake. Okay, then, Tim. It was really nice to talk to you again, and I guess I'll hear from you again at a later time. Thank you so much for having me on, and have a great week.
Same here. Take care. Happy
bye-bye.
Mother's Day.
Oh,
okay,
thanks,
bye-bye.
Love. Take care.
Okay,
and you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Again, it's been another production of The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. You can download this episode on iTunes or Blog Talk Radio. We do ask you to put a rating on each show. We really appreciate it in iTunes or on Blog Talk Radio. Appreciate it, everybody. Have a great day. Take care.
Thank you for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For more information about equipment financing and asset-based loans, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. Or call us at 866-611-7457. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. And thanks again for listening to The Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.